That's right. We are back. It is the Parish of the Patriots. It is the 148th episode, and I did realize this is going to be, I guess, the Christmas show. So expect a Christmas Christian-specific, Christmas-specific message in our Christian-specific segment. Ooh, I'm going to get tongue-tied like that. That'll be later in the show, usually around about the halfway mark. Varies a little bit. Just kind of depends on how long I ramble on other topics. But I'm glad you joined us here this week. Like I say, we are back. We're still plugging at it. And yes, I now we get a new feature to the show. I do try to. It's the weekly health update. That's right. I was told by Sven Longshanks, it was pointed out to me that on last week's show, when I gave the whole big long story about my broken foot ordeal and dealing with the healthcare system, that I missed giving the punchline, which was after all of that, I went through and I finally go in there and I see the doctor. They don't put a cast anymore. They don't do that anymore. He basically told me to buy this $10 boot, you know, orthopedic boot thing off of Amazon. I could have just skipped all of that and bought the $10 boot off of Amazon. But there we go. I didn't know that. But see, yes, now I'm hobbling around on the boot and my foot is quite a bit better. So that's some good news. I take it where I get it. I go have my first consultation with the cancer doctor. This is exciting stuff. I did go and do that. Cost me $150 for like 5 minutes in the office. That was good work, I guess, if you can get it. I've managed to, I did buy an insurance policy, get an insurance policy that starts on the first of the year. Of course, it has this ridiculous deductible that's just short of like $9,000. But my hope is that maybe I can avoid just completely bankrupting my household. I don't know. Probably not. But yeah, you know, and then of course I had to deal with that. I've had to deal with the fact that now the cancer doctor isn't in the network. Y'all know what this is about. Y'all dealing with this stuff too. The horrible healthcare system here in the U.S. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, so I guess I'm going to have to find this different doctor, or I might can have an out-of-network. It's been a whole confusing thing. I'm not going to go on and on about it, but I will just say there's no frustration like the frustration of dealing with Blue Cross Blue Shield of India, because that's what you get. You call that number on the back and it's India, and it's like, I help you very much. And they give you the list, because the list I found that they had online isn't seeming to help me find a doctor that does this sort of thing. So they give me a list. I send you a list. My name is Mary. I help you very much with your problem. I send you this list. And they send me the same list I found online. And they just say, oh, got all these doctors to choose from. And everyone I call does breast cancer. They don't do this sort of cancer. So I'm back at square one, which is, I guess, basically I'm going to stick with this guy. And yeah, just try to basically force the insurance company to pay something. If not, well, so be it. In the meantime, like, I had to call the dermatologist's office that did the initial biopsy of this thing. And what do I got to do? This pathology report, blah, 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 stuff you don't care about. And, you know, they're telling me, they're like, oh, well, we can do whatever you want to, but understand, you need this done now. This needs to be happening now. And it's like, but of course, in America, everybody's got to get paid first, because that's how it is. Whenever I talk to somebody from a country that doesn't have the American healthcare system, they're always like, well, what's the deal? I mean, they have to, they can't just let you die if they can't get their money. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is the U.S. They exactly will do that very thing. That's the way it works. So that's all. No, I'm not going to go on the whole show about these topics, but I do like to share with you, the listeners. And I just say on that point that your show support is more important, more appreciated, I suppose I should put it that way, than ever. So if you do get something out of the show, you know, hey, it's appreciated if you want to pay the tithes. Let's get into listener supporter mailbag. Mr. T, GPD, dough for the show, and God bless you. And that is very much appreciated. Those that, you know, week in, week out, or I have monthly, those of you, you know, send support to the show every couple weeks or every month. You know, I really do. Like I said, I really do appreciate it. Triangle Whip, come through again. Merry Christmas and God bless. And he's got a note here about not reading the rest of the note on here. So we, of course, will honor that. I will just say this, though. I'm having a psychic moment. There shall be Radio Albion Roundtables. I see Radio Albion Roundtables in the future, and I think it's probably a pretty good guess that Lukashenko will be discussed quite a bit. Of course, Lukashenko is, like, spoiler alert, like, you know, my top three favorite favorite, you know, national leaders in the world are Lukashenko, President Xi of China, and Putin of Russia. The fact that number two is Xi of China probably ought to be a hint that, you know, my reasons for ranking them this way aren't that necessarily that, like, these people benefit me directly or anything such as that. But yeah, I think there shall be Albion roundtables in the future, and I think it's probably a safe bet. It's hard not to discuss these folks. So and finally, this is from Nick. Dear Grandpa, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas. Well, same back to all of you. Thanks for all you do. Little dough for you and Sven, and I'll be sure that that gets passed on to him. Be well, God bless, and it is very much appreciated. So remember, if you want to be a part of supporting this show, then you can find that information at the bottom of the description page. Just scroll on down to the bottom. You don't have to read the description. You get down to the bottom. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. Got Monero. Got email address down there for your notes. So, yeah, if you've got a weirdo cryptocurrency, let me know. I can more than likely get you a email address, or I'm sorry, a wallet address for that. And it is very much appreciated. I was asked the other day, I was talking and I was asked about, you know, hey, do you want to do like a fundraiser for some of this expenses and stuff? And right now, I may change my mind. Right now, I don't have any plans to that. I just have this attitude of, look, I don't want to grovel for shekels. If you get something out of the show, great, please, you know, do that. Pay your tithes, you know. If you think the show was crap, well, just don't then, I guess. But whatever. Let's get on into this week's discussion. We just never run out of things to discuss here. That's one great thing about living in these tumultuous times, I suppose. I saw where the Joe Biden said that the unvaccinated people were headed for a long, dark winter of death, destruction, doom, the usual stuff. Oh, and we're going to overrun the hospitals, of course. The demonizing of the unvaxxed is ratcheting up as expected, right on schedule. Nothing surprising there. It is funny to watch him go on, though, about, you know, we got to get everybody boosted. You got to get boosted, more vaxes, more boosted. And then they talk about, well, basically, this, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't do anything. But I guess people follow right along with it. It doesn't seem to matter. Of course, inflation continues to soar. And now they're saying that next year they're going to raise interest rates, try to head off this inflation. I don't think they will. I really don't. I don't think they can. I remember reading back when they started doing this basically zero interest rate stuff. I remember reading from people pretty knowledgeable on this that this was a trap. And once they started doing this, they couldn't ever escape from it. And I think there's some validity to that. I don't know that they can. The only thing kind of keeping this facade of an economy going is the near zero interest rates. If they start ratcheting up interest rates, I think the whole thing just goes on and crashes and burns. So even though they're saying, oh, we're going to raise interest rates, I'm skeptical if that's going to happen. It'll be something to watch and see. Maybe they will. I don't think they can. I think they're stuck in a trap with this monetary easing. I don't think they can start ratcheting up interest rates. But I suppose time will tell. You know, I'll be honest, we're already starting right off with these topics of the week, I suppose you could say. But the honest truth is, I don't really feel like talking about that. You know, because look, we're on the same boat. Y'all, this stuff, y'all get it. I mean, we talk about it, it's interesting to talk about it, we continue to talk about it. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you're listening to this show, you probably get most of this. You probably do. What's discouraging, and I think I can speak for all of you when I say this, what's discouraging is everybody else doesn't seem to be. You know, I mean, even those that are for now holding out on the vax, most of them are probably going to fold. But I mean, it's like, we're out here, you know, all of you, I'm talking to me when I say we, I don't just mean me, I don't just mean my fellow hosts here at Radio Albion, I mean all of you too. I'm speaking for y'all. We're out here. We get it. We see where this is going. We've spent how many years raising the alarm bells about these things? And who listened? A few people, maybe. The fact of the matter is, the vast majority of people haven't listened. The vast majority of people just going along and will continue. There's no reason to think they're going to quit, continue. Maybe they will. Maybe there'll be a breaking point. I don't know that there is. The brainwashing, the mental conditioning that has been permeated our society for so long is very, very effective, very well-tuned, and obviously works very well. It's hard to break through. Even people that appear to get it. I saw a comment the other day on a story about, I don't know, we've read, you know, the U.S. government has, you know, pivoted from China. They're back to demonizing and basically threatening war with Russia. And I was reading a story concerning this on RT. And I always, you know, it's one of those few websites that allows comments. And you go down to the comments and there's somebody like, oh, Russia's not the enemy. I'm like, yeah, yeah, good. The real enemy is the deep state and China. And it's just like, I'm so sick of pointing out how absurd this stuff is, you know? And these people, it's like, on the one hand, they get it. Russia's not the enemy. Yes, you're right. But China, and it's like, why do you think China is? Well, because the same people who are telling us Russia's the big bad boogeyman taking away our rights and freedoms or whatever the hell this week. Last week, they were telling me that it's Russia. All that matters to these people is who's telling them, isn't it? Like, if Team D says that Russia's a big bad boogeyman, they won't accept that. But if Team R comes out and says China's the real boogeyman, they'll sit there and nod their heads. If they see it on Fox, it's really so many of these people aren't any different than the shit libs that they criticize. You know, the shit lib, everything they see on CNN or MSNBC is the gospel truth. If it's on Fox News, it's heresy. But likewise, on the flip side of that coin, for the normie con, if they see it on Fox News, it's God's truth. But if it's over there on them shitlib networks, if it comes from the Biden, just as the shitlibs believed and bought wholeheartedly into the stupid Russiagate scam against Trump, no matter how absurd it is, so the normicons buy wholeheartedly into the Biden is owned by the CCP bullshit narrative. Just wherever they hear it from, this is what they follow. As truth seekers, for all of you, we're out here and we spread these truths and it just doesn't seem to permeate, you know? It doesn't seem to break through. The masses, the people themselves as a whole just seem to go along with whichever way they're led. We get called crazy. We get called conspiracy theorists and all of these other slanders. No matter how many times our predictions come true, these are the things they call us. Because of this situation, this whole thing is going to come apart. I mean, it is. It's going to come apart. Any illusions you may have that we're going to save America or turn this thing around, I'm sorry, not to be discouraging, but to be a realist. It's sort of like one of the things, you know, because you have people be like, no, we got to stay positive. We can turn this thing around. But we're not. I mean, that's not reality. The vast majority of people are going to go along with whichever side of the uniparty tells them is the direction they need to go. And neither side, those being led by the Democrats, those being led by the Republicans, none of them seem to realize that both of the teams they're following are ultimately leading them into the same area, you know, in the same direction. They're being herded into the same chute. Neither side seems to recognize this. And, you know, that's where most people seem to be. It's, again, this reality. It's not a matter of staying positive. One of the things I found funny about dealing with this whole cancer thing, I've heard this from people, and they're like, the important thing is to stay positive. You know, the nurse at the cancer doctor's office the other day said something like, you know, my blood pressure test a little high. And she's like, are you nervous? I'm like, well, I don't think I'm really nervous. I said, this whole cancer thing's kind of got me bummed out. And she turns around, looks at me and says, the most important thing is to stay positive. I've had people tell me, and I realize people mean well. I'm not trying to just be an asshole here. But I mean, that just seems so silly to me. Because I'm a realist. Because if you follow the truth, you're a realist. You know, and it's, I mean, it's like, you know, stay positive. Well, it's like, you know, if your house is in the middle of burning down, you know, the house is burning down. You can be as positive or negative about it as you want to be, but the house is still burning down. We got to stay positive. We're going to turn this around. We can save America. No, we're not. It's this thing is done. The vast majority of the people are going to be led right on in. Right on in. Now, the ability to lead them, the entire system, you know, may come crashing down. I think there's a good chance that it will. But unless it does, as long as it holds together, these people are going to go with it. You know, one of the things I think we strive for on the show is to stress to the listeners that you're not alone, not crazy. I always say, don't lose your shit. You know, don't go crazy. You're not alone. But understand, it seems that we're pretty few. we're, you know, speaking. I think we have a pretty nice size audience for what we do here. But, I mean, spread out across the country, actually, for this show, across the entire planet, there's very few of you. There's very few of us. The vast majority of people are just sheep. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not being trying to run people down, run humanity down, but that's what it is. And they're going to go along with where they're told to go. If we had, I don't know, an aristocracy, if we had like righteous leaders at the top, if we had a you know, I don't know, if we were ruled by our own people, essentially, you know, there wouldn't be a problem with that. I mean, they might kind of lead them over here where they didn't need to be, or over here where they didn't, but overall, they wouldn't be, there wouldn't be like this path to destruction. But those people abdicated that role because they wanted to go chasing after, I guess, whatever kind of pleasures of this world they could. They abdicated that role, and now we're ruled by these other. We're ruled by people who are malevolent towards us. And we're being led to our destruction as a people. And understand, one of the things you got to get over in life is just being able to accept the things that you do not have the ability to change. You didn't, and that number one thing, I always say this, number one thing you don't have the ability to change is what other people are going to do. You can't force other people to do what you want them to do. You can't. I mean, if people are going to go along with it, they're going to go along. And it can be frustrating. You can sit here and pound the table or stand on the rooftops and holler at them. But ultimately, they're going to go where they're going to go. They're going to choose to do what they're going to do. You know, this can be demonstrated because people talk about, you know, when people, we talk about and we look at the direction this is going and what could we do to stop it? And the answer is simple. It's noncompliance. If 50% of the people in this country just refuse to comply with all of this nonsense, just refuse, not going to wear the mask, not going to social distance, not going to take the vaccine, we're not going to shut down our businesses, we're just not going to do it. Really, I mean, they can't put half the country in a camp. Oh, the answer is very simple. If people just simply quit going along with it. You read these horror stories from places like Australia, you know, and it's like, yes, but if everybody refuses, you don't have to go out. It's fine. You see these videos and these pictures where they're holding a big protest, and that's all well and good. But if everybody just refuses, they say, we're going to have the police and the military on the streets and make sure, check people's papers, check people's reasons. Why are you leaving your house? If the whole nation's under house arrest, or the whole region, whatever the case may be. I know it's different for region to region, but you know what I'm saying. But if everybody in the region just leaves their house and goes about their daily lives, what, the two military police on the corner is going to stop every single person driving to work because they're ignoring the mandates? They can't do it. It's a simple answer. It's a simple answer. All everybody has to do is not comply. Just don't do it. Don't go along. But they will. But or at least so far, they will. So far, they have proven that they will do so and probably continue to do so. Something may change. You know, I'm not a pessimist. I'm not an optimist nor a pessimist. I'm a realist, which means I try to follow the truth. And so far, the way it has been demonstrated, the majority of people are going to go along. They're just going to go along. They're going to rock the boat. They're going to obey authority regardless of how tyrannical it can become. However, that being said, not to be all negative here, that being said, they're becoming more corrosive. Yes, they are more corrosive, but more coercive. They're getting more threatening. They're really starting to demonize the people. We haven't reached the official level of terrorizing the people yet, but we're heading in that direction. And historically speaking, that approach tends to be fairly short-lived because they erode their own support. I've always said this, that no matter what sort of system you live under, for any government to survive, they have to have at least the tacit support of the people. The people have to feel like they've bought into the system to a certain extent. You know, I mean, I hate to use a football analogy, but, no matter how many talented players you would have on a football team, if none of the players believe that the head coach knows what the hell he's doing, the system he's implementing could ever work, then the team is going to be a failure. It's going to be a losing team, no matter how much talent they have, because they don't buy into the system. They don't believe in it. They don't believe in what the coach is selling. They don't think his passing plan, running game, defensive strategies can work, and the team will be a failure. as people check out of and quit buying into the system. It loses legitimacy. This is why you have people and it's like, you know, oh, this guy, you know, even, how do I want to put it, even dictators have elections, you know, and people sit there and scratch their heads. It's like, oh, he had an election and he got 90% of the 100% of the vote went to Saddam Hussein or whoever, you know. And people sit there and scratch their heads like, why do they even bother? Well, because the people need to believe they're buying into the system, that they are being ruled by their own consent, regardless of if that's true or not. I mean, if you live under, you know, a dictator of some sort, which doesn't, you know, by the way, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's a bad person. You know, it's just kind of a word that gets thrown out there, like a slur that gets thrown out here by, you know, the West. You know, oh, they're ruled by a dictator. Well, he looks like he works really hard for the betterment of his people. You know, I mentioned earlier my top three leaders of countries in the world is Lukashenko, President Xi of China, and Russia's Putin. Now, somebody look at like President Xi and be like, well, why do you support him? You're white and he's Chinese. But because I think President Xi is doing a really good job for his people. That doesn't, he's not doing a good job for me, but that's irrelevant to the fact that I look at it. And it's like seeing and understanding the strategies they're implementing for their people, for their nation. I think he's doing a really good job. But in the West, they'll point to these people and say, they're a dictator. Even though people such as Putin get reelected, I mean, they have elections and people really like the guy and they keep voting him in, but it doesn't matter. According to the West, he's a tyrannical dictator. It's a slur. So when I say the term dictator, I don't necessarily mean that in a derogatory, negative way, as is promoted by the media apparatus in this country. But the point is, even under a dictator, they'll hold elections, even if they're fake elections. Like if you have somebody in Central America or the Middle East or something, and maybe they put on a farce of an election. But they do that because the people have to feel like, well, I'm being ruled over by this guy. And yes, it may be true that if I say the wrong thing, this guy might send men with guns to drag me off somewhere. But at the same time, they feel like them, their nation, their people have bought into the system, that they're giving their consent. Even though on the surface it may not actually be correct, they're just being ruled over, but the people have to feel like, yeah, well, this guy's only doing all this to me because I'm letting him, because I'm allowing it, because I agree to it. I'm getting enough out of this system. You know, I mean, yes, this guy might be a tyrannical dictator. Yes, if I say the wrong thing, I could be drug off in the middle of the night, but you know what, I don't have any crime in my neighborhood. You know, I don't have crime because if anybody tries to do crime, the military comes in here and shoots him. I've talked to people that live in countries like that, by the way. I worked with a guy from Africa one time, and he was telling me straight out, he is like, in my country, the military will come and shoot these criminals. They do not put up with this. They shoot these people. He was bragging about this, and rightfully so. He was proud of his people. He was proud of the nation in Africa that he was from. You see, it's a trade-off. Yes, you know, they're getting something out of it. And I guess where I'm going with this is the fact that as this regime becomes more and more oppressive, more and more tyrannical, at some point, the people being able to talk themselves into believing they're consenting to this falls away. The more elections they fraud, the more they sit here and contradict themselves and just tell bald-faced lies and tell people that what they're seeing with their own eyes isn't true, what's real is what they're telling them, and it's obviously a lie. They're undermining their own legitimacy with the people, and there is an end to that. You cannot just simply bully people all the time. You can do it for a short time. They can intimidate and bully the population to an extent, but what happens is the fatigue sets in. You know, I mean, they terrorize the population. They come out and say, take COVID, for instance. This started, and oh my gosh, there's a pandemic, and everybody's going to die. There's going to be bodies in the street. And they whip up this hysteria, and everybody's like, we don't know what's going on. What are we supposed to do? Don't worry, we're working on a vaccine. When we get that vaccine, everything will be fine. But right now, stay at home. Stay at home. Don't go to work. You could all die. There's going to be bodies in the street, and people are confused, and they don't know. So they have to just rely on what the government and the media is telling them. But now we're 2 years. Okay, we're 2 years into this shit. And even for the believers, when they say Omicron, this latest variant, the Omicron, there really is going to be bodies in the street this time. And so they're forced to ratchet up the hysteria even more because now there's fatigue setting in. You see, the instant confusion at the beginning and the surprise element of it, I suppose I should say, is gone. They've been promoting this for 2 years and there's no bodies in the street. They can run all the file footage of hospital ERs all they want to, but nobody knows anybody really personally that has died simply from COVID. Perhaps with COVID, along with something else, but not of COVID. They can run all the file footage they want to, but at some point the fatigue is setting in. The fatigue is setting in, and it gets harder and harder. That's how it is when you just simply try to bully the people. You can do it for a short time. The government can come in and threaten everybody and say, if you don't do what we say, we're going to ruin your life. We're going to make it where you can't work. We might even drag you off and throw you in a prison camp. And it worked for a while. But after a while, the people say, you know, I don't even give a shit anymore. Just do whatever. I'm just not doing this anymore. I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not going to be bullied anymore. Even the masses of people that appear to be complete sheep, at some point, the fatigue sets in for everybody. And what are they doing? They're just trying to double down. And that's the mistake. That's the trap they get caught in. They just start doubling down. Oh my gosh, it's the fatigue is starting to really set in. The people are starting to not get whipped up into a hysteria. What are we going to do? We're going to double down. We're going to become more threatening. We're going to become more intimidating. We're going to bully the people harder. Try to force them to stay in submission. It becomes a trap. And at some point in time, people just don't care anymore. They don't care what you threaten anymore. You couple with this with the fact that the economy is going to tank. A lot of what has kept people just going along and headed down the chute and entertained by whatever's presented to them by their media preference on TV is the fact that for themselves, they're still making their mortgage payments. They still have a nice car. They're still going about their lives and hoping that at some point in time, this insanity will end and things will go back to normal, though obviously they're not going to. But they are able to tell themselves that it is going to go back to that. But at some point in time, as the fatigue sets in, as the economy crashes and they start losing that, when their house gets foreclosed and now they're having to live in a rented travel trailer somewhere or a shitty apartment that's a third of the size of where they were living, when their nice car is gone because they couldn't pay for it because their job got shut down in the name of the doom virus, and now they're having to drive an old hoopty piece of shit car that they can't hardly keep running. When Christmas comes and they can't buy presents for their kids, all of a sudden that it doubles down. Their ability to bully people, because people don't have as much to lose, you know? They don't have as much to threaten to take away. When they have all of these nice things, they can say, well, you either go along or you're going to lose your nice house and your nice job and everything else in your life. But when everybody's already lost those things, which is where we're headed with the tanking economy, when a lot of these people have lost those things, that threat doesn't mean much anymore, does it? What, you're going to take away this man's cardboard box that he's living in basically now because he's lost everything else? You're going to bully this guy who more or less now has nothing left to lose, you know? And as those things, you have to look at the peripheral things that go along with it. You know, the downstream things, because this happens. As a illustration we used just now, the man who's lost his job and lost his nice house, and now he's living in a shitty apartment or a travel trailer rented out on a little lot somewhere. Guess what? His wife left him because of all that and took the kids too. His wife left, took the kids, doesn't make any money, but now he's supposed to pay child support, live in poverty, and his life is ruined. But the government, what, is going to intimidate this person? You're going to threaten them? You're going to lose something if you... What am I going to lose now, bro? Wife's gone, kid's gone, family's gone. Jail. She's trucked on down the road. Don't hardly let me see the kids. Damn sure the government says if I make a penny, they're going to take it to go give to her for quote-unquote child support. Of course, I have no say if that money's going to actually support the children. She can spend it on her new hairdo or whatever the hell she wants to. You see, it gets harder and harder. These other things that come with this, it's going to make it harder and harder for them to intimidate and bully the people, because at some point in time, people don't have anything left to threaten. Now you're just left with threatening bodily harm against them. I realize that maybe what I'm saying here is starting to sound contradictory or convoluted, but that's how, and I apologize if that's the case. The point here is, you have to understand that on the one hand, look, you know, we can't stop people from going along with this. I mean, you don't have the ability to do that. You have to be realistic about that and not get stressed out and go crazy about it. But on the other hand, understand that their ability to keep going down this path for the government, for the regime, I keep stealing that term from Dr. Johnson, I apologize, for them to keep going down this path, there's a timer on it. You know, I mean, again, I'm not a pessimist. I'm not an optimist. I'm a realist. We can't, I do not personally have the ability to force people to understand what's happening, to force people to quit going along with it, to force people to understand and accept the truth. I don't have that ability, and neither do any of you. But understand at the same time, because I do, I get tired of people that talk about, you know, this system, like those who run this system are omnipotent, are all powerful, are all seeing, and there's nothing we can do. They're not. At the end of the day, they're people. Demonic people, but people nonetheless. And they're on a timer. There's only so far. Yes, at the beginning of the, you know, using threats and being coercive, at the beginning that's real effective, but it's limited. It's always limited in how long you can do that. And then the mistake is they'll start doubling down trying to keep that working. And it just starts speeding up how quickly its effectiveness ends. I mean, the point is that it's not all good. It's not all bad. Most of it's bad, to be honest. But understand, they're, like I say, these people are not all powerful. They do not control the universe. You know, what they're doing has a is it's effective right now. It's been effective. But its effectiveness is going to dwindle, especially coupled with the inevitable collapse of the economy. This sort of financial, this sort of economic model is inevitable. It's got to collapse. When you understand that the way debt works is there's, you know, way a usury-based economy basically works is at any time, because interest is being charged, at any time more money is owed that then exists at all. You know, say that again. More money is owed, is always going to be owed than what exists because interest is being charged. So that money has to be created. That money has to come from somewhere to be paid in. So there's always more money owed than what exists. And we look at where we're at now, how things are spiraling with the money thing. So the system is inevitably designed. It has to collapse. I mean, it has to. It cannot keep going because of the very nature of the system itself. I hope that makes sense. So you couple the inevitable collapse of the economic system with the fact that threatening people and, you know, being more and more oppressive in the way they approach the people and rule over the people is always limited because fatigue, because it quits, it just quits. And as people lose what they have, those threats be even, it's accelerated. The effectiveness of that, the decline of the effectiveness of that becomes accelerated. You know, and it doesn't work so well anymore. At the end of the day, the answer always winds up being the same for us. For those of you who understand and get it, and we continue to speak the truth. Obviously, I continue these shows. I haven't thrown my hands up and said, well, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, the answer remains the same. You got to survive. You got to just survive and bide your time. The system will collapse. I mean, this is not sustainable at all. And there's other factors. I've already pointed out the economy. If they blunder into a major war, these other things, there's all these things that can go wrong. I can't reiterate it enough. And I hate it when I catch myself repeating this, but I just got to, because I get so tired of people that acting like, you know, these folks doing this are like omnipotent and all powerful. They are not. Honestly, I think they're kind of stupid. Because anybody could look at this and see, well, a limited ability of how this is going to work. But understand these other factors that could come in. If they actually screw up and get into a major war, it's going to accelerate the collapse of being able to do the things they're trying to do. The economy, all of these other factors, they're up against the clock too. Our goal, your goal, as a truth seeker and as somebody who understands what's happening, it's just to survive. You got to keep going. Go on with your life. You know, I mean, we're coming up on Christmas. Try to enjoy it. Get together with family. I mean, you can't be just caught up in this all the time because you have no way of changing it anyway. So just keep at it. Yes, sir. This thing is going to collapse on itself. Who knows what comes after that? A lot of hard times, probably. but maybe some rebuilding. Maybe we'll wind up with something better. We don't know. Ultimately, though, that will be decided by those who survive and those who basically show up for the future. We got to get into our Christmas Christian specific segment sermon this week. Yes. Trying not to get tongue-tied. We got to get into that, so we're going to wrap up the regular portion of the show. So, as I say every week, you know what to do. Let's get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's Christmas Christian-specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. So, as you get older, holidays, birthdays, they just creep up on you. You know, like my birthday. Like people say, oh, happy birthday. I'm like, what? You know, it's like, oh, it's your birthday. And then I'm expected to believe to remember other people's birthdays. Like, you forgot my birthday. It's like, I don't even remember my own birthday. It's kind of the same way with holidays, you know? I didn't even realize. Basically, I was fixing to record the show, and it's like, oh, wait, it's fixing to be Christmas. It works like that. Once Christmas basically ceases to involve small children, which is where all the real fun and festivity and all of that comes from, once you're just basically dealing with adults, it kind of loses its, I'm not going to say its meaning, but to the really significance of it, I guess, as far as making a big deal out of it. Now, you might say, well, this is supposed to be the celebration of the birth of Christ, and it is indeed. But I mean, as a Christian believer, I live that every day. I mean, this isn't the one time of the year. You know, it's, you have people that go to church, which I don't. This is our church service as far as I'm concerned. But, you have people go to church and they'll go twice a year, once at Easter and once at Christmas. And it's like, there, I'm good. Now I've got my fill of Christianity. Yes, I'm a Christian believer. I listen to a Christian message twice a year, once at Christmas and once at Easter. Because you're guaranteed, I think one of the reasons is because you're guaranteed you're going to get some sort of positive message. But alas, Christmas has crept up on us once again. Like I say, I was just fixing to record the show. I was like, oh my gosh, fixing to be Christmas. I guess this better be a Christmas message here in our sermon this week, if you would, our Christian-specific segment. And, you know, we could, of course, easily just phone this in and just do one like everybody else does. But that's not what we do here as regular attendees here at the regular members of the congregation. Now, we kind of don't do things the normal way. A normal Christmas sermon would be something along the lines, you know, Jesus was born. This is our celebration of the birth of Jesus and the hope he brings to the world and peace and love, blah, blah, blah. We all know that. I mean, I don't think there's a need to rehash that. I thought we'd talk about some of the other things. You know, we'd really maybe delve a little deeper into it. Talking about Christmas, I hate to sound like such a, I don't know, so negative about it, but it's gotten so tacky over the years. It's really, you know, we had the whole thing with the, you know, elves are going to check the early life on the elves, you know, with the Christmas ink thing. And people get outraged about it, and rightfully so. But people need to understand, as Christian believers, what is supposed to be a religious holiday has been degraded over a long period of time. Some disgusting nonsense from these elves like Santa Inc. I mean, this is just kind of a culmination, like an exclamation point at the end, kind of like a rubbing it in our faces. But it's been coming a long time. And sadly, Christian believers, the people of this nation, have taken an active part in it. Just little things bother me. You know, I mean, like, I remember, of course, part of it is, again, the magic. It's more exciting when you're a kid, you know? When you're a kid, because like when I was a kid growing up, you know, we're poor. Most of you, a lot of y'all were the same way, you know, and you're going to know what I'm talking about. You got presents twice a year on your birthday and at Christmas. And when it was Christmas time coming around, because we'd get that Sears catalog book, and you'd start, when you got the Sears and Roebuck wish book for this year, and you kid, and you got that thing, it's like, sit down, start flipping through this thing, you know? Okay, start marking. And you would have to, like, plan it out. It's like, okay, like, my ultimate, if I could get anything I want out of here, this mini bike. I want the mini bike. Because, you know, you ain't going to get no mini bike. So you have to work, you know, that would be my dream gift. Okay, next down, because I know, even as a kid, you ain't getting the mini bike. This pedal car, this pedal tractor, or whatever. So you mark that one down. And you kind of just go down the list. That way, your parents' claws, your Santa parents, however you want to say it, you know, they got something to work with here. They got something to work with here as far as what they can budget in. I don't think people truly appreciate back in those days how hard their parents worked to make Christmas a thing for their kids. And it's not that way anymore. You kids, and I hate to sound like a grumpy old fart, and that's not my intention, but it is a fact of reality that I look now, and most kids today get presents all the time. Every time they go to the store, they get something, even if it's a little something. They go to celebrate Christmas, and they wind up with this giant pile of gifts, and most of it's just cheap crap that winds up thrown in the corner of the closet and forgotten. Never to be seen, never to be seen again, you know? And how is that something really special? You know, how does that really have a meaning? Santa Claus. I've gotten where I just hate Santa Claus, you know? I've over the years, this isn't a new thing. This isn't me being cynical. It's a new thing because over the years, I've watched and Christmas became more and more Santa Claus, reindeer, snowman, and less Jesus. It goes hand in hand with how Christmas became Xmas and then became Happy Holidays. We got, maybe it's part of our Judeo-Christian values that we've replaced mentioning Jesus with Santa Claus, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, or Happy whatever, as we've essentially taken the meaning out of what it's supposed to be, what we're supposed to be remembering. I remember being a kid, and one of the things that was exciting about Christmas is the lights, you know, the decorations people put up. And we'd go around and look at these lights and these different decorations, and they were always so beautiful. Now, again, I realize some of this just has to do with looking at things through the eyes of a child versus the eyes of maybe a somewhat jaded adult. But still, there was something about it. The bulbs were big and pretty. They were them big bulbs. You know, them big bulbs that got hot. They got really, really hot. You could set fires, and people did, you know, because they had them big old bulbs that got blistering hot. But there was a certain amount of beauty to them. Now we have 500 little bulbs and flashing LEDs, and they flash out red, white, and blue or whatever, and you drive by and tune in the radio, and the lights are flashing to different kinds of music. It just somehow seems cheap. Not monetarily, granted, I'm sure the flashing lights that go along with the music system is probably not cheap at all as far as monetary. But as far as the beauty and what it represents, it seems cheap compared to just somebody working and stringing up big, pretty bulbs that get really hot that you better not touch. They'll burn. It gets so hot. Like the colors on them were basically paint on the bulbs, and they would start like, you'd know if them bulbs, you could tell how old them bulbs were, because if they were a couple years old, made it through a couple Christmas seasons, like that paint would start blistering off of them. Y'all know what I'm talking about if you got a few years on you. I drive around now and the Christmas decorations or what, these hoardable, like these inflatable, I hate these things. And I'm sorry if you've got them in your yard, I'm not trying to like crap all over you and being insulting. This is just me. I hate those cheap looking, hideous, inflatable lawn ornaments. Thank goodness they don't include Jesus. Could you imagine people having like a big inflatable, like tied down inflatable Jesus floating around their front yard? That would be really insulting. As you drive around, there's the ugly inflatable Santas and reindeer and snowmen bouncing around in the wind in somebody's yard. It just doesn't really seem to mean much to me. But I guess it all goes hand in hand with the reports about, you know, how what consumer spending is going to look like this Christmas for basically seems like my whole life. And it got worse as the years went on. Always stories on the news by mid-November, 1st of December. You know, what's the projected consumer? Consumers are projected to spend this much money. This is going to really help the economy. It never seems to really actually help the economy. I don't know, maybe it helps somebody. But consumer spending, it's about spending. How much are you going to spend? I remember reading different stories about how much debt people were going into, people running up their credit cards to have a big Christmas. Jesus, that's what Jesus is about, using your MasterCard and your Visa to, run up and give somebody some gift that they're probably going to forget about. I am kind of a Scrooge when it comes to gift giving, especially for adults. You know, people are always like, you know, why aren't you going to give all these adults in your family presents? And I'm like, well, why? I don't want anything. You know, I'm a grown-ass adult. If I need something, I don't have to wait for Christmas anymore. That's one of the good advantages, you know, because when you're a kid, like I said, you wanted something. You better be waiting for your birthday or Christmas. It's a long, dry haul sometimes. Or if you know, when you're a grown-ass adult, if you need something, you're going to go buy it, right? Why are you waiting for Christmas? So when you have this gift-giving among adults, what's it wind up being? If somebody's going to give you something, you're like, oh, wow, thanks. You know, I didn't even know I needed that. Wait, didn't really need it. But nobody else knew what to give you because you're a grown-ass adult. Anyway, it's supposed to be a holiday for us, for the Christian believers. It's been nudged out. Santa Claus. Happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, happy go do your consumer debt spending, whatever the hell. And the message has been lost. I sure, like I say, you can just count on going to a Christian church this time of year and you will get a Christian sermon about Jesus. And I can pretty much guarantee it's going to be about the hope brought to the world and the salvation. And that's all well and good. I'm not downplaying those things. But seldom will be mentioned the other things that he brought. I see people get, you know, upset when they read the part where Jesus says, you know, I'm bringing division. I'm not bringing unity. You know, house will be divided. You know, the house will be divided. Family members are going to be divided against one another. And people are shocked by this. I see people run it down and say, well, what kind of savior would say they're bringing division to a household? And yet you do not have to be a Christian believer to see this. You see, the truth always brings division. You know, act like this was a controversy, and people at the time were probably like shocked. What does he mean? He's bringing division. Why should a household, it's a bad thing for a household to be divided against one another. But you don't have to be a Christian believer to see this. Remember, Jesus is the center word Jesus used describing himself was the truth, and the truth brings division. Case in point, if you get together with your family, see, you're not even a Christian believer. You're getting together with your family for Santa holiday or whatever the hell you pretend this is. For your consumer debt spending holiday, and you're not a Christian believer, but yet you get together with your family, your parents, and your siblings. You get together with all of them, and let's say they're all hardcore believers that there is a doom virus out there looking to wipe everybody out, and they've all vaxxed up and gotten their boosters, and they're going to wear their masks and social distance, and you yourself are the one person who understands that this is just a power play. This is just a tool in the kit of tyranny rising. And you refuse to go along with all that. You're a hardcore refuser, not doing the vax. You're not doing any of that crap, not wearing the mask. I don't believe in any of this crap. Show me the bodies. And you get together with your extended family. What's that look like? If you even get together, because they may tell you you can't come. You refuse to get vaxxed. You refuse to wear your mask. You refuse to go along with the narrative. You can't come. You have this conflict. If you have siblings that believe in this different shit-lib nonsense that's promoted, whatever is the in-fad cause for the week, and you get together and there winds up being a conflict. There winds up being this great, you know, oh, how dare you have these horrible extremist views, and you wind up with conflict. Yet when Jesus said, there's going to be house divided against the other, and people are like, oh my gosh, Jesus is just trying to cause division. No, he's saying, if you follow the truth, there will be division. This is just a no-brainer. And yet I see people, they're like, oh my gosh, what was this message from Jesus? Must be some sort of trick. Bringing division. We shouldn't be divided against each other, but you will be. Because some people are going to follow the truth, very few, and most of them are going to follow the lies. And if you're going to stand with the truth, whether you're a Christian believer or not, like I say, this has nothing to do with your being a Christian believer. He's just saying, as a matter of fact, if you're going to hold to the truth, you're going to be a house divided. With the case I just lined out, using COVID as a example, you are going to go and you're going to find division in your house. Well, Jesus didn't sneak in there and cause the division. You're not even a Christian believer. And yet there it is, isn't it? There it is. Why? Because you're holding to the truth, but the rest of them are going along with the lie. That is how it works. It's not like it's something really shocking, really surprising. This is just the natural flow of things. It is true that Jesus brings us hope. Obviously, our salvation, we If you're a Christian believer, you preach Christ crucified. That's what we do here with this show. That's what we do. He does bring salvation. And you, as I said before, you can go to any church this time of the year and you're going to get a message about the glorious birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. And he brought salvation to the world, which is kind of a stretch. I mean, in the sense that he brought the availability of salvation to the world. It's not given away for free. And this, I think, kind of gets into where the MCC, where the church of today fails. They act like this just this free gift that just gets handed out to everybody. We do have salvation. It is a wonderful thing. Glory to God for it. Because of Jesus Christ, we can be forgiven of our sins. But you have to understand, this life, however long it is for you, and you don't know how long it is, don't operate under the assumption that you've got plenty of time left, because you don't know how much time you got left. If you truly follow Christ, I'm talking about truly follow Christ, not you show up to church twice a year, or, you know, if you're asked about your religion, you need to feel like you need to check something off, so you check Christianity. If you truly follow Christ, it is a marathon. And you're going to, because you're a failed human being, you're living in this fallen world, you're going to sin, you're going to screw up. And because of Christ, you can be forgiven and you can keep working at it. But it takes that effort. That's what always gets passed over in these messages of today. Oh, Christ brought salvation to the world, as if there's no effort required on your part. I always say the magic, you know, they always talk about these magic words. Just repeat these words about accepting Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, and you're getting into heaven, guaranteed. But you got to put the effort in. You don't get into heaven. You're not getting into heaven by the effort itself. You see, you get into heaven by your faith. You have to have faith that Jesus Christ is Son of God, died for your sins, 3 days later was raised from the dead. But how you demonstrate that means nothing if you just mouth a bunch of words. You demonstrate that by your deeds, by your actions, by every day doing your best to remember, to seek him, to follow him, to try to understand him. It is a marathon. It is a lot of work. But this is how you demonstrate your faith. The Lord says when the time comes and this little trial, this short time you get in this temporal realm ends, you know, I mean, the Lord's looking at how did you demonstrate your faith? Well, I said the magic words one time in 1987. So I was told that guaranteed me to get in. Well, where was your faith? Well, I went off and did whatever the hell I want to and just forgot all about it after that. No, you demonstrate your faith by how you live your life, by the fact that you're seeking. I'm not even saying like you have to go off and do some grand thing in the name of the Lord. It's not that. It's just where your heart is. And regardless of where your heart is, you can have your heart as dedicated as you can for the Lord, but I guarantee you're going to sin. Because you were in this body, you were in this earth, you're on this earth rather, you're in this world. You were going to sin. But where's your heart? Are you still trying to reach him? Are you still trying to get better? You're trying to improve yourself. You're trying to get closer to the Lord. Are you trying to do those things? Yes, you're demonstrating your faith. Yes, you have forgiveness. Yes, you have salvation. Yes, because Christ was born. You have this chance. You have this opportunity to where you can grow. People hear this and they're like, well, you're making it sound like it's a lot of work. Congratulations. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. One of the things I find disgusting about the failure of the MCC, of the church of today, is the fact that they try to pass this off. They try to market Jesus. And so many churches sadly operate on a business model. They're trying to bring, they give messages trying to bring customers in. That's why these preachers always sound just like motivational speakers. They try to make it sound easy. They want to convince people this is easy because I guess they assume people are lazy. Maybe they are. You know, people want an easy way. And they try to preach Jesus Christ the easy way. When we point out the truths, when we point out this truth of how you demonstrate your faith, how you live your life, where is your heart? People hear this and they're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This sounds like a lot of work. Yes. Yes, it is. It's not easy. It's not easy. This is why people get confused, because they hear the MCC and they talk about how easy this is. And yet if they go in their Bibles and they read and they talk about Jesus talking about it being a narrow path, talking about it's a very difficult path to enter the kingdom of God, and most people can't do it. And there's this contradiction. People don't understand this because, you know, they go to church twice a year at Christmas and Easter, and they get this message, and it's easy. All I have to do is say the words and say the words they tell me to say, the magic words, and I'm saved. How is it that Jesus said that it's a difficult, narrow path, and it's hard, and most people aren't going to get in? Because they're incorrect. Because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. People don't like hearing it's a lot of work, but it is. Being a Christian believer is a lot of work. You demonstrate your faith by your deeds, by your action, where your heart is. Is your heart with Jesus, or is your heart just on whatever pleasures you can chase around today? It's a lot of work. You've got to put the effort in every single day. It's a marathon, and you run this marathon your entire life. But you can run it because of Jesus, because Jesus came into this world so that we could have a chance. It's like running that marathon, and you have those water stations. You know, people running the marathon, and it's like you can stop and get that drink of water so that you can keep going. If you didn't have that drink of water, if you're running this big, long cross-country marathon, but there were no water stations, and you're just running along, and no matter how hard you're running, like at some point you dehydrate. You just fall apart. You can't complete the race. It's not a very good analogy, but Jesus, you think of it as, because of Jesus, there's water stations along the line. And so you're going along, but you're getting so burdened down, and you're getting hot, and you're getting sweaty, and getting, I stop and get this big drink of water, and you can go back to running. But you got to go back to running. You don't just stop at the water station. Well, I found a water station. My race is over. No, you got to run it to the end. But thankfully, there's water stations. Jesus is there to help you keep going. Because of Christ, you can keep going in this marathon. Sadly, what's promoted in the church is that you just basically never leave the starting line. You just say the words. You step over the starting line, your race is over. Da-da, you finish. No, it's not how it works. It's a marathon. You work at it your whole life. As we get ready to wrap up here, look, it is a glorious occasion. It is a glorious time to stop and really just, I mean, again, we kind of live our lives day to day like this as Christian believers, but it is good to have a time set aside to really stop and just consider and reflect and remember that Christ came into this world. Just coming into this world was a great sacrifice, but Christ came into this world, died for our sins, 3 days later was resurrected from the dead, overcame death. You know, this is this very expensive thing. I always complain about, you know, the fact that they make it seem cheap. You see, you were bought at a very extreme price, and now you have to, part of your faith, you have to continue to press forward in your faith because Jesus prayed this high price. And again, as I said earlier, people be like, well, it sounds like a lot of work, and it is, but understand that you were bought at a very extreme price. Working hard to prove, to strengthen, to improve, and show your faith is the least we can do, is it not? I have to sit here and consider the fact that this may be my last Christmas message. I don't know. Maybe we'll be sitting here next year having discussing Christmas and reflecting on these things. But I do not know. I don't know. But neither do you. None of us knows how long we get on this world. Just always remember, you were bought at a high price. There's nothing cheap about it. And yes, you are saved with your faith, by faith in Christ Jesus. And you demonstrate that faith with your actions, your attitude, where your heart is. Is your heart here? Is your heart on the Lord? Is your heart centered on God as much as you can? Even when you mess up, no matter how many times you mess up, do you get back up and say, okay, I screwed that up. I need to get recentered and get back focused on the Lord. And when you feel like you're just lost and you're wandering around and you're screwed, look, as long as you keep at it and you keep striving, he doesn't give up on you. He always say he loves you more than you love him, regardless of what you may think. As long as you stay focused and just keep at it, as long as you're seeking him, he's not going to quit reaching his hand out to you. This is the gift of God through Jesus. As long as you don't get, but you have to demonstrate that faith. Where is your heart? He cannot take a back seat. He will not take a back seat. He's got to be he's got to be that thing. He's the thing you're centered on. You try to focus. You try to reach for your whole life. This is how you demonstrate your faith. Yes, it's a lot of work. But again, you were bought at a very high price. I do hope y'all have a great Christmas. I hope that you have the opportunity to get together with family, which is really what's important. Don't get hung up on the gift thing. Don't get hung up on all that. If you have small children, and this time of the year, when you're able to put up the Christmas tree and the children are excited and they come in and open their presents, relish that. Enjoy it. You'll wake up tomorrow and they'll be grown. They'll be grown. They'll eventually leave your house and it'll just be you there. Or perhaps they'll come and visit. But even then, that magic of when they're small children and you get to see them and do that, trust me, it's going to be gone before you know it. Truly treasure those moments with your kid. It's a gift that you probably don't realize at the time that you're receiving. But when it's gone, you will realize it. When your kids are grown and gone, you'll realize that, wow, you know, that it was so special then. So enjoy these things. Consider these a gift from God, your family, your children, and getting to see these things. Because they won't last forever. Appreciate these things. Appreciate what you can enjoy out of it. And as always, in all of it, remember the Lord. Remember Jesus Christ. Remember the true gift you were given from God. We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you again, everybody that supports the show. It is very much appreciated. And thank you all for tuning in and listening. And we'll see you next time right here at the Parish of the Patriots. Mm-hmm.